Good morning and welcome to our roundtable panel and to the roundtable this morning. It is nice to have you aboard and along with us. It is a weird, very cloudy day.
Okay.
With a lot of with those big harsh black clouds that look like
gloomy,
very gloomy, and
I like it.
It's crisp.
It is crisp. It's fall-like.
It's fall-like.
It
yeah.
seems what my wife and I call a balloon festival morning.
Oh, very,
yes.
How wistful.
North Country people.
Absolutely. We welcome you, and we welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. WAMC's Ray Graff is with us this morning on our panel. Good morning.
Good morning, all.
And last night about, quarter of 11, I got an email from Rosemary, who said that due to a scheduling conflict, she was unable to be here this morning.
Yeah.
And I was like, ooh, because I know Alan is out because of the holiday. So I thought, oh, all right, now what do I do? So I did a midnight email to Mike Spain, who answered.
Not till six.
Not till 5:40 or whatever it was, yes. But thank you, Mike. And saved us.
Yeah.
So
we'll thank Mike.
We'll know better after an hour.
excellent point.
Good point.
Filling a seat, at least.
It's a large order to try to save us, but we thank you very much for coming to make the attempt. Let us talk a little bit about the story that has dominated the news over the past 2 weeks, and that, of course, is Syria. This is a story that just continues to, and rightfully so, dominate headlines, but also to become a huge political story now. A sharply divided Senate committee voted Wednesday to give President Obama limited authority to use force against Syria, the first step in what remains as the New York Times quotes it, a treacherous path for the president to win congressional approval for military attack. And I guess what we should take from this is that yes, there was authority. The two words are limited and divided, I think, are probably the takeaways.
Yeah, I mean, it was a 10-7 vote by the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. The new senator, Joe Markey from Massachusetts, who replaced John Kerry. Ed Markey, yes.
Yes.
Ed Markey voted present because he said he was haunted by having voted in favor of going into Iraq, and he didn't want to be formally opposed to it, I guess, and was walking that fine line. Massachusetts's other new senator, Elizabeth Warren, is a liberal, and I think it's going to be a hard sell to get her to go along with the full Senate. And there's other senators who are going to be listening to their constituencies and trying to decide whether to stay with the president, who they're trying to be loyal to, or, answer the call of their constituents, who really have said pretty strongly they don't want us to go into this conflict. So it's very, very difficult for these lawmakers to decide. And unfortunately, politics plays a lot into it. I think there's a lot of Republicans who see political gain by, embarrassing the president on the national front and embarrassing the United States on the world front by not supporting it. And then what will Obama do? I mean, it's a tough political story, and yet I think it's a valid issue for them to be divided about. It's very difficult to know what to do. I mean,
It is difficult. I'm not sure, I don't...
It's not black and white.
It is not black and white. And the other thing about it, too, is that while I think the Markey move was, somewhat,
A little wishy-washy.
A little wishy-washy. Yeah. At some point, you have to...
Walking that line. Yeah.
Right. Your choices are yes or no. What's present? But anyway, so... I can understand the concern there, of course, that this will come back and haunt you. And that, of course, to me is the concern, right? That most of these lawmakers have.
So they're more concerned about getting reelected.
They're posturing.
Well, I think it's dual. I don't want to make it sound like no, it's all for political gain. I don't mean that at all. What I do mean is though I think that a lot of the caution that comes into this certainly comes from an overall feeling that we all have, which is, you don't know what's going to happen. You don't know what the right thing is. As Mike said, it's not in black and white.
Well, a lot of politicians, lawmakers regret voting for Iraq, you know, now seeing how it turned
out,
you know, and it did haunt Hillary Clinton in the 2008 primaries.
Yeah.
And became a factor in her eventual loss to Barack Obama to get the nomination. So, you know, they're going to have to own this, and they're going to have to live with it for the rest of their careers.
But,
so.
I mean, isn't that why they're paid?
Yeah, it's their job, you know.
Yeah.
And is their job to do a good job and do the right thing, or is it to get reelected, you know? And
to represent the people.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, partially represent
your people.
Representing people, yes, absolutely. However, you know, and I'm not equating this with our entry into World War II by any stretch, but public sentiment, highly against it. FDR really had to work and cajole to get us in to help the Brits. And, you know, people were still against it when we went in. So necessarily public opinion plays a role, but, I mean, we elect them to make these kind of tough decisions.
I agree. It is not always just the latest poll and you should vote that way. They need to make hard decisions. It may cost them. It may cost them their own political future, but if it's the right thing, that's what their job is. And they have to consider what their constituents are saying, and they have to weigh all the evidence. But, you know, even the evidence is, there's people who don't, you know, aren't completely convinced today that it was, you know, Assad's regime that did it, you know, that used chemical warfare. You know, I don't know whether that's there's credible evidence otherwise, but, you know, Putin, you know, Vladimir Putin has even suggested that the president.
There was no signature for whatever the stabilizer is in the sarin that would have indicated it was Assad's. That's, I think, what the Russians are saying. In other words,
right. And then you have others who say, well, if we go in there and we help topple that regime, then some of the more radical al-Qaeda-controlled rebel units will get control of that chemical gas,
yeah,
and they'll use it on more people. And that's, that kind of rhetoric is frightening. I mean, it makes it a very difficult, you know, decision on which way to go. But I think in the end, what do you think? Are they going to end up, you know, after a struggle, backing the president and giving him the authority to do this? I mean, it would surprise me if they didn't.
I just want to read this one paragraph from the New York Times article. As the Senate committee hashed out its resolution under the shadow of a potential filibuster. So keep that in mind, filibuster.
That's true. Rand Paul's talking about that, yeah.
Members of Mr. Obama's cabinet pressed their case for action before the House Foreign Affairs Committee, drawing sharp criticism from Republicans and raising doubts among Democrats over the wisdom of getting drawn into a messy sectarian conflict. So, yes, if to look at Mike's question of, so what will we do? Well, if you decide no, you know, then what? And how messy is this going to be? And I think the beginning line of the Times article this morning, in which they call it a treacherous path for Mr. Obama,
yeah,
it certainly is a treacherous path. That is not too strong of a word in what he is facing here.
Well, hopefully in the time it takes for Congress to decide and the Senate to vote next week, perhaps, if it isn't filibustered in the House of Representatives to return and debate this, in that time there may be more clarity.
As to what? As to whether the chemical weapons came from Assad?
Perhaps.
The UN said yesterday they're expediting it,
right,
their inspectors' teams. Yeah, it'll still be 2 to 3 weeks.
Mm.
That's,
well,
the
that's
best
probably
you can do,
that.
UN? Really?
Yeah, well, you don't want to make a mistake on an assertion like that.
Well, Assad could die of old age before this is decided.
Well, that would solve a lot of problems.
Perhaps. Perhaps not. It may open up another can of worms.
Right. It would topple the regime, and who knows.
We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back to discuss more about Syria. We'll talk a little bit more about the party affiliation and certainly what this means for Democrats on the issue. Plus, then we'll have a news break, find out the latest that's happening, and come back and talk about many other issues as well. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org.
Support comes from Capital Wine at State and Lark in the heart of Albany, offering local and international wines, tastings Fridays 6 to 9. CapitalWineStore.com. Baypath College Graduate School, offering a Master of Science in Strategic Fundraising and Philanthropy, on campus or online at graduate.baypath.edu. The Mohawk Valley Garlic and Herb Festival, Canal Place, Little Falls, New York. Garlic and herb growers, garlic cuisine, live music, and more. Saturday, September 14th, 10 to 5. Eat, stink, and be merry. MVGHF.com. And H. Houst & Son True Value Hardware and Just Ask Rentals, Woodstock, New York. Locally owned since 1932. Providing tools and materials for home care products. True Value. Start right. Start here. HHoust.com.
A reminder, roundtable at WAMC.org is where you can email us. You can also comment on our Facebook page or our webpage or tweet us at WAMC Roundtable. We'd love to hear what is on your mind this morning as we talk mostly about Syria in this first half hour, and then we'll turn to other issues after an NPR news break. There is another article in the New York Times this morning I thought was interesting about congressional Democrats that are who are torn over involving the U.S. in another Middle East war, and ultimately could become the major barrier to President Obama's plan. Many of the president's core supporters are of that liberal wing of the party. However, where do the Democrats stand on this? He will obviously need Democrat votes, scores of Democratic votes, if this resolution is going to pass the House. So the question remains, what do the Democrats do? They say they're being confronted with a difficult choice. Go against the wishes of a president who is popular and well-respected in their caucus, or defy voters back home who are overwhelmingly opposed to another United States military intervention overseas.
Well, it goes back to what Ray had brought up just a minute ago, and that is, what is their job? And their job is to assess all of that, to take all of it into consideration and make the right decision. But unfortunately, this story in the New York Times and other commentaries today suggest that this will become very politically laced, and it may involve bargaining on other issues that are before Congress. And in order for Obama to his chief of staff to go out and to gain the votes he needs, he may have to compromise on other things. It just seems like you shouldn't have to. Well, we have a water project in my district, Maybe I could support your incursion into Syria if I could get that funded. If it comes down to that, or it comes down to posturing of some newer members of Congress who are positioning for the 2016-2020 national elections, that really muddies this whole thing up. And why are the Republicans going to back Obama, even though their leadership is in support and some of the more traditional, the longer-term members of Congress who are Republicans are supporting Obama? A lot of the newer guys don't feel this any reason to make Obama look good and see it as an opportunity. So between convincing liberal Democrats who are traditionally wary of getting involved, and Republicans who have the ability to make strong political gains by embarrassing Obama, I think he's got a real fight ahead. This is going to be a very dramatic 2 weeks.
It's an interesting – there are two views toward the future here that I see is, those who are elected and up for re-election are concerned about that to some extent. The president's concerned about history and where he stands in history to a lesser extent. I mean, obviously, the exigencies
the legacy
on the ground.
Thing, yeah, I don't know how
I think
big
that matters, yeah. I think, to him to some extent.
But some of the people who may even support Obama and support taking action in Syria, if they do vote for that, they're going to face a tough primary challenge if they're up for election.
If it goes badly.
Depending on how it goes. I mean, if it turned out to be the right thing, and who knows, that's a gamble. But like Lindsey Graham is facing, I always thought he was kind of a conservative Republican, didn't you? and he's now facing a challenge in his home state, you know?
I think Rosemary brought this up earlier in the week, where it's fascinating to see, as this issue goes, of we're seeing different facets of these, of many of these individuals.
Right. And that could, I mean, some are looking at this as a way to seize control of or take stronger. Democrats could take stronger control of the it's ironic that if the Democrats could be brought in to support Obama and enough Republicans are brought in so the Senate supports Obama, some of the Republican senators that do support Obama might face challenges that would cause them to lose their party's nomination and make their seat open for a Democrat to run in. So the Democrats could actually end up with more in Congress in one crazy scenario.
I think this is a pathetic aspect of this. I mean, they should be worried about, you know, their moral obligations. If there are moral obligations, they should worry about what happens if we do go in and we don't get all the chemical weapons and they end up in the hands of rogue agencies. They should worry about reality and not politics, and it's just they
so shouldn't. let me ask you, because I'm fascinated by your point, Ray, about the president and this whole legacy issue, because I do agree. I mean, I certainly think about history is something, you know, I don't know that if it's that calculated, but certainly, you know, you don't want to screw it up.
Yeah.
And but here is a guy who probably, we can safely say, will not run for elected office again. You know, this is it. So the question, and a young man, so the question does remain, if you are the president and you, I would think, he's certainly smart enough to understand the concerns of both Republicans and Democrats, of what he can say to make them feel better about a decision that would move this forward.
Well, you know, the way you ask that, it makes you wonder. I mean, a lot of people just thought he had the authority to just do it unilaterally,
I guess he does.
Yeah, but. You know, I don't think that's in contention, although some say he doesn't. But he does, you know, he could have just done it, you know, and then
don't
they
could
ask. Have said he
just
shouldn't
do
have
it.
Done it, but
yeah.
But he could have just done it. But by engaging the country in this discussion and the Congress in this discussion, he risks having them not support him. And then, it seems like it could blow up in his face, really.
Or a cynic would say there's another political angle in that
it's not my fault.
I made a red line.
Yeah.
I really don't want this to happen. Let's throw it to Congress.
Right.
I mean, that would be a cynical way of looking at it.
Well, it does spread the responsibility should anything go wrong. And you say, well, if something went terribly wrong, he could say, well, I brought it up for discussion. Everybody, you know, after a lot of debate, agreed with me. I mean, it gives him an out. I don't think that's what's on his mind.
It doesn't seem to be, because it seems like the language
really
would be more, a little more, let's have this discussion, let's work through it as a country, let's debate it, as opposed to, we have to do this and you have to come. Because, I mean, let's face it, I mean, this is a full court press by the president to try to get.
It'll be interesting 2 weeks from now, after there's been ample debate about it, because everyone is debating.
Except about 10 seconds. But go ahead.
Is to see what the public opinion polls will say.
Absolutely. We love to hear what you have to say. Roundtable at WAMC.org. News is next. Welcome back to our roundtable panel. On the roundtable this morning, we welcome your input, roundtable at WAMC.org. You can also comment on our webpage or Facebook page or tweet us at WAMC Roundtable. At WAMC Roundtable is our Twitter account. We have been talking mostly about Syria this morning, and we're going to do one more story locally on that issue, and then we'll move on to other things. Paul Grondahl has a great story in the paper about a church in the region that has a strong Syrian background.
Yes, Paul went out and found local residents who have some very strong feelings about whether the U.S. should be involved in a war in Syria, or at least bomb Syria the way the president has proposed it. And he didn't find a lot of support down at St. George Antiochian Orthodox Church in the south end of Albany. It's an interesting little church community. It was founded by Syrian immigrants in the 1930s. Mm. Who came here after the after the crumbling or during the crumbling of the Ottoman Empire, they escaped Syria and they came as laborers in Albany and set up, their church community. They were first, going from house to house, and then they put their resources together and they built a church in the 1950s. And they have this parish that now has brought in other people from Middle East Christian sects who now live in the capital region. And so it's kind of a diverse church. They have some Egyptians and some others who have, traced their roots to Christians in the Middle East. And, Paul talked to a couple. He talked to one fellow who has family back in Syria, and he's very much against the U.S. escalation of any action in Syria. He's worried about his own family. It's interesting. There's about 20% of Syria is a Christian, and the other 80% would be Islamic. And this gentleman he spoke to, and others have echoed this, that, Christians have been somewhat protected by the Assad regime, and they're worried that if that's toppled, while they don't support any of these,
atrocities,
right, excellent word, they do worry about their own families back in Syria should a radical rebel group take over, and they don't know what that will mean. And so it's interesting. He spoke to their pastor, and he echoed that they're very concerned about their families back home. And I think that it just indicates that there's a diverse set of opinions for all kinds of reasons. Some people just are against the U.S. involvement because they don't know what it would achieve, what's the point without getting further involved. Others are worried about toppling Assad and having chemical weapons get into the wrong hands. These people are worried about their community back in Syria. And there's just a lot of unknowns, and it just shows you how difficult it's going to be to bring together public support to whatever action the U.S. might take.
Given what has happened to the Copts in Egypt and Christians post Saddam Hussein in Iraq and persecution, I would say they have reasonable reason to be fearful of what happens when, and I think it's only a question of when, Assad goes, protecting their lives.
Yeah.
I just want to make one quick note of the passing of a Times Union journalist who's been around for a long time, who died suddenly yesterday, Jim McGrath. And there's a beautiful piece that Steve Barnes wrote in the paper that's online about Jim's passing. And he was the chief editorial writer for the Times Union since 1996. And he was a newspaper man, wasn't he?
Yeah, Jim was a great colleague. We're all really sad today at the Times Union because we got the word overnight from his wife, Daryl McGrath, a professor at the journalism program at UAlbany, who they were vacationing in Cape Cod, and Jim suffered a heart attack and passed away. Steve Barnes kind of captured a lot of in a very small little tribute to him today, and I'm sure we'll have more in the paper and online, but he captured Jim's kind of personality. You'd go to these editorial boards and the politicians would be there. The room would be full of all these suits, and Jim would come in wearing a sports shirt and a pair of khakis, and he'd sit right next to the politician, the senator, Senator Clinton or the governor, and he'd just talk to them in a soft, low key way and kind of ask them questions. And he had a passion against injustice, and he had the ability that so few people have is to convert that passion into powerful words. And, last week, the New York State Press Association, the Associated Press members, announced their awards. And he won two out of the three editorial writing awards. He's won many awards, the Bar Association in New York State, the New York publishers, news publishers have honored him repeatedly. He was a voice. Now, people may not know him in the community, but they know the voice on our editorial page. And we're going to really miss him as a colleague, just a terrific longtime colleague. But the community will miss his really distinctive voice. So we're very, very sad about that. Thanks for mentioning that, Joe.
Well, certainly. And our thoughts with, of course, his family and with all his colleagues at the Times Union. And again, if you get a chance to read Steve's piece in the paper or online, it's very special. It gives you quite an idea about how great he was as a person and as a writer in this region. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk about other issues. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.
Support comes from New York Renaissance Fair, Sterling Forest, Tuxedo, New York. Celebrating their 36th anniversary of Elizabethan-inspired food, games, music, and performances now through September 22nd. RENFAIR.com. McCabe & Mack, Attorneys at Law, Poughkeepsie, New York. Providing legal services for homes, families, and businesses throughout the Hudson Valley for over a century. MCCM.com. And the Adirondack Council, retiring government-issued air pollution allowances to reduce power plant emissions. AdirondackCouncil.org.
Welcome back to the Roundtable and our panel this morning. Mike Spain is here, the associate editor of the Times Union. Ray Graff is here, the associate editor. I don't know.
Whatever.
he's in charge of
the news guy.
Our news guy. little bit of everything, right? and we, of course, we welcome your comments as well. Roundtable@wamc.org. Wanted to talk a little bit about this. Has been, I guess, this went on line, went on the air about a week and a half ago. But the New York Times did a big piece on ESPN. Getting some competition and their challenges, of course, have long called themselves the worldwide leader in sports. Yeah. And they produce, this is an astounding figure to me, 35,000 hours of programming.
Yeah. Amazing.
Unbelievable.
Of live athletic events televised in the United States. And not surprisingly, they make a lot of money for the Disney Corporation, who they are owned by. Well, in comes Fox, our good friends at Fox, and they have started a new entity, which is a 24-hour sports network, which is called Fox Sports One.
Yeah.
And it
meaning
is.
There'll be a two and a three, obviously.
We're assuming that this is the start of something big, right? So you would think that, as this article points out, paying $15.2 billion for Monday Night Football, $5.6 billion for Major League Baseball.
This is ESPN.
And $7.3 billion for a 12-year deal to broadcast the new college football playoff system. ESPN certainly has a lot going for it, and yet they are feeling the pinch. They are seeing their numbers decline and their viewership go down, and concerns that Fox could be a head-to-head rival.
Well, I mean, even without Fox entering the game, so to speak, you know, they are certainly a contemporary media that is struggling to, maintain its leadership and maintain its audience, and the fragmentation of audience using the internet. They're trying to leverage that, and they certainly were already struggling. So having a well-funded competition like Fox come in it might end up hopefully benefiting the consumer, and certainly that's what we would hope. But it might also make it, put it at odds where one cable system will have one and one will have the other, and will become the victims of their own kind of that could be the downside. What do you think, Mr. Sportsman?
I think we have them all right now, and I watched a little of Fox One on the weekend, and frankly, I don't get a chance to watch British motorcycle racing enough.
Right. I like the cricket channel myself.
Yeah, I'm not overly concerned if I'm ESPN at this point.
Well, first of all, the one thing that Fox Sports One has that ESPN does not have is Regis.
I was hoping you would not say Regis.
I am in support of any broadcast entity that brings Regis Philbin
really?
Back to the airwaves.
And have
to
you seen the show?
Is that right?
I have seen the show.
Okay. And?
I just like seeing Regis. All I right. don't care. Yes, it's uncomfortable, but I... yes, it's awkward. Of course it is.
Well but I wasn't going to watch till I heard that.
You know, and but I just love the man, and I think he's 82 years old. He's a broadcast legend, and if look, they gave him a show, and I'm just thrilled.
You know, this New York Times article.
It's better than the Larry King show.
Well,
have you seen that?
No, I didn't even know he was still on.
Yeah, he's on a he's on. Is it Hulu? Hulu has a it's a web thing. Yes,
yeah.
And he's on that. What were you going to say?
I forget.
Okay. let us also say that one of the things that I found interesting about the article, actually, this paragraph is why I wanted to bring it up this morning, because I just thought it was great. In the mid-2000s, ESPN's appetite for programming was so voracious that the Justice Department looked into complaints that the network was engaging in anti-competitive practices, an inquiry that ESPN executive first acknowledged in recent interviews. The complaint centered on ESPN's practice of buying rights to more college games than it actually had the capacity to televise.
Yeah.
So basically, we just collect them. We don't actually air them.
And you keep others from using them.
Sure. Right? That's right. Yeah. So we still own them, and then we quote-unquote warehouse them.
It's an old record company thing, you know, from the 50s and 60s. You get a group. You don't intend to make their record. You sign them, and you just let them languish. That's...
You know, this comes after ESPN got a little egg on its face, with the NFL and Frontline.
Of PBS.
Yes, of PBS. They were in a partnership with Frontline to look into the whole issue of concussions and the allegations that the NFL for years had covered up concussions. And suddenly, about a week ago, I guess, they just withdrew, or maybe it was 2 weeks ago, withdrew their involvement in that and sort of left PBS to complete the program, and it was happening at a time when they were negotiating their NFL contract, to air the NFL games. So some people have felt that they've kind of tarnished their objectivity, and they might be a little bit too close to the people that they cover. And so maybe Fox coming in now, that gives them
Do you think and the CBS fan, and NBC.
Well, right. I mean, that's true. I mean, do you think that the sports fan really cares where it comes from?
No,
as
I want it
as
all.
They can flip the dial and get whatever they want, you know?
Can I be honest with you? I was surprised Fox didn't already have a sports channel. When it was announced, I was like, I thought they already had one.
Yeah, they just play a lot of sports.
Yeah, so I think the one I do have to say that Peter Sagal had a great line in this week's Wait, Don't Tell Me, where he said that he was talking about that very story that you just mentioned, and that ESPN denied the fact that the billions of dollars at stake over their NFL contract had anything to do with their pulling out of their partnership with PBS. And the PBS officials were quoted as saying, "What, you guys get money for airing stuff on TV?"
You don't have to find a foundation to support it or solicit public funds.
How does that work?
You know, I think a bigger issue here is the bundling issue. In other words, ESPN has nine I don't know how many channels they have.
A lot.
Okay.
Including a cricket channel.
I'm sure. And so, you know, they're expensive for cable providers. I forget what it costs, but I think it's the most expensive package of channels.
Right.
And so the thing is, some people say, well, you know, why are you making people pay for channels they never watch? And I think McCain, in this article, McCain had a great, he's been against bundling. And, you know, CBS and Showtime and all these arguments with Time Warner,
right.
The NFL network with Time Warner, all of this comes back to the same issue. McCain's great quote in this Times article compared bundling to all the choices of a Soviet election ballot. And so he says, let's make this all a la carte.
Well, yeah, and once it becomes a la carte, they say hundreds of cable channels will just disappear because there will be no...
Right.
That's okay.
Right,
yeah. And maybe...
I think that's
maybe
fine.
Maybe that's okay.
Well, you know, a winnowing out,
well,
I think
we do
fine.
At 3 a.m. when
well,
we can't
you know,
sleep.
It's funny you say that, and I think there's two sides. One, you say, well, gosh, I want all this variety. I want as many channels as possible.
Yes.
But in a true free market way, if nobody watches them, they should go away. Something better will take their place. So I certainly see both sides to that argument.
Yeah, and I think, you know, and also for the consumer to have more control over the cost of their cable bill, so you pay for what you actually use and that you're not paying for stations that you will never turn on in a million years. And that certainly makes sense. This article also points out that Senator Richard Blumenthal, who represents ESPN's home state, is even saying that is really pushing to undo the bundling of channels into cable packages that allow viewers to simply pay for those that they want, which, I mean,
some form of that will happen.
Not to feel bad for Time Warner or any of the cable companies, but that does seem like a nightmare to figure out.
Well, it'll be easy enough to figure out, but I want all the sports channels. So I get the sports pass on my cable network.
Sure.
And it's, you know, it's $6, $7, $8 whatever a month, but I get all the extra college, the Pac-12. I get, you know,
the
NFL
games?
Network, both channels, and the Red Zone. And I don't know. Maybe high school is on.
Yeah, there is high school. I get those. You get the high school football games.
It's nice to have an option, though. In other words, I may not watch ESPN 17 any other time, but on college game day, there might be one game in 3 months that that game's on?
Right.
I'll put that on.
And if you're not a sports head or you're not into music programming or you're not into whatever, you don't have to have it on your cable system.
Yeah.
And I think that is
In that sense, the cable companies would like it to be a la carte as long as you buy it all from them, you know, and you have to buy through them. The issue will be you'll be able to get it all on the internet and you won't need the cable companies. You'll get it on
except to provide the internet.
Yeah, well, that's true, but there'll be competitors there,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, there's another good point. And I think we've talked when Paul Conde was on about Google now getting into the race with the NFL game day, that franchise going up at the end of next year. Currently, DirecTV handles all those games, and Google making a heavy bid saying, okay, well, you can watch all these games, broadcast them to your television set, and do it through us.
Yeah,
and that means anybody can do it. So it'll
all
take interesting
stuff. $35 device you plug into your TV.
Yeah.
That Google now makes. Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah.
Yes, it just they happen to make. Right. let's talk about the Star tax exemption. Another story that's making news in the region.
Yeah, this is important. If you are a property owner, a residential property owner in New York State, and you receive a Star exemption, and many people do. Because there's been some controversy about people abusing that and owning more than one house and getting exemptions on their vacation property, et cetera, the state is going to kind of do a refresh. They're going to require everybody to reapply, and you're going to get a letter in the mail in the next few weeks, likely, from the state tax department, and it's going to be a letter you should not ignore. It could cost you $4,000, $5,000, $6,000, depending on what your assessment is, or a few thousand. But whatever it would cost you, if you don't file it in a timely way, you'll miss out a year of the Star tax exemption.
And what do you have till the end of December?
Yeah, I believe so. Rick Carlin has a story today in the Times Union about it, and he was saying that people just have taken this for granted. They registered when the program began,
right.
15
or when
years
you first
ago,
bought your house.
Or when you bought your house,
yeah.
and they have to do it. So it'll give you the instructions on the letter, and if you miss the deadline of December 31st, as you say, it will cost you. There's no way to go back and change.
Apparently, it's very easy. My neighbor, she's on the case, and she's already done it. Takes moments.
Yes. No, and the original form was the same way.
Yep.
So is this a way of do you think winnowing out to? I'm not saying that.
No. I mean, I think through just neglect.
The program has not changed.
Right. But they just want to really kind of refresh everything because they have discovered that more than a few cases, people were unaware and they were collecting Star exemptions on property that. For which they were not entitled to collect it, like second properties, et cetera.
Now, it's a state program, but administered locally. Is that the way it's always been? The state is now taking control back?
Well, they're telling you how the letter notifies you how you can do it locally. And even some municipalities, like cited in today's story, the town of Gilderland, for example, are having public meetings. People are being notified by their local governments to do it also. And it's more of a formality, but not one to pass up. It'll cost you in the pocketbook.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Ravens, Broncos, football tonight.
Oh, all this talk about football. Oh, good heavens.
We'll take our last 2 minutes that we have on the air. What do you think, Ray? Any thoughts on the season?
Yeah, I think someone is going to win that game tonight.
Excellent.
Yeah. I don't know.
You don't think it's going to be Baltimore?
Not necessarily. I think Peyton Manning, this could be his last hurrah. As a star, will sometimes go very bright before it burns out.
I watched a preseason game with him. He looks like he's 20. Maybe not 20.
You know,
28.
A bad offensive line, he'll look 98 by midseason.
See what happens.
Yeah.
Very, very cool. And then Sunday, it all starts.
What do you mean? The real?
Tonight's the first game.
The New York Giants, you mean? Of course. They start on Sunday night. That is really all that matters.
You feeling good about the season, Ray, with the New York Giants?
No, I feel 8-8. That's what I feel. That is being optimistic.
What are you who do you root for?
Well, I like New England. I like the Giants. I like the Jets. I'm not.
Oh, so you're like Gustina. I have 12 favorite teams.
I have to say
I pay attention at the end of the season.
I am a very strong New England fan. I love New England, and but I have to say when the Giants were here, I would spend a lot of time at training camp because it was just awesome to watch it and to see the athletes there, and I miss it a lot. So I became a Giants fan because I was connected to it, so I miss that. But it is it'll be a fascinating season. So
it's exciting.
It is exciting. Oh, you're giddy.
It's football.
Even without Tim Tebow, right?
My wife is already she likes football, but she's already tired of it. I have my cereal and watch the NFL news in the morning before coming into work. He says, what is your problem?
I just, one last comment about, because you just mentioned it about the whole Tim Tebow affair, which I found just hilarious, was, so, they let him go, he's on the team, and then they cut him. And then they say, okay, well, then this is done. And all this story started coming out. He's done, he's done, he's done, he's done, he's done. And then Belichick holds a press conference and goes, we may bring him back.
Mm. Well, practice squad.
We may bring him back.
Whatever.
And then all of a sudden it all starts again.
He's got nothing going on. He'll be around.
As a journalist in the Boston Globe pointed out, they have not yet stopped selling the jerseys in the pro shop at Patriots Stadium. So that is something to keep in mind. Yes. Enjoy football tonight. Gentlemen, thank you very much. Again, Mike, our thoughts with you and the entire Times Union newsroom. And great thanks for coming in and helping us out at the last minute. I appreciate it.
I'm happy to be here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Raymond, always a pleasure. We'll see you tomorrow.
You're welcome.
Excellent. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.